This episode contains descriptions of sexual assault and violence. Listener discretion is advised.
I'd never known fear, and right then I just got the biggest education of my life.
Sherry Ball Garcia grew up in Southern California, but her childhood wasn't at all typical.
It started because on a playground in elementary school, we had races at recess. The yard lady who, you know, was in charge of the playground at the time, her daughter was on a track team. Well, I beat all the boys except for one boy. So she had spoken with my mom and said, wow, my daughter's on a track team and Sherry's really talented, you know, can you bring her by practice? And it was La Jolla Track Club back in 1971. And my coach, Tracy Sunderland, he was manager of the U.S. Olympic team in Rio, very incredible coach. He got Wilt Chamberlain involved, and he became the sponsor of our track team, and then we became Wilt's Wonder Women. And it was tough. You know, I came home a lot crying, you know, I want to quit.
How old were you?
I was 8 when I started, and I was a child prodigy. So at 10 years old, I ran a 508 mile, which is, I was a little 68 pound child, you know, tiny. And I was 3rd in the nation.
Performing at this level was a lot of pressure for a child, but Sherry found running practice to be a respite from her home life.
My mother, she was great. She took us to the track meets and was a chaperone, but she had some issues, drinking problem. My mom was an alcoholic. And so my track was my safe place every day to go. And I got the attention and the nurturing. And even if it was a difficult type of attention and, you know, there was some yelling and screaming going on at if we, you know, weren't performing well, but it was all in our best interest. It really, really was.
By the time she was in high school, the Amateur Athletic Union, where Sherry could compete on a national level, had been disbanded. Her only alternative was the regular high school track team.
And there was no competition. There was really none. And so I gave up the sport until my senior year. And then I ran for a couple years, had a knee injury. And then I got married and had kids. And
by 1992.
And then after my children were born, I started running again in road racing. And then Mr. Sunderland started coaching me again. And we were training for Olympic trials and the marathon. I was training a lot, a working full-time mother, and running around 50 miles a week.
That's more than 7 miles per day.
Get up in the morning, do my runs in the dark by myself, and never even blinked.
In September of 1992, Sherry accompanied her husband on a work trip to Maui. But when you're training to qualify for the Olympics, running doesn't take a vacation.
We got there on Tuesday night, and Wednesday morning I got up and said, I'm going to go for my run. I'm just going to do a half, you know, quick little half an hour. It was about 5 a.m. Well, the interesting thing that morning, my husband said to me, honey, no, just wait and I'll get on a bike. He'd never, ever offered to get on a bicycle and go with me for a run, ever. I just told him, no, go back to sleep, you know, and then when I get back, then we'll go. And that was that. And it was dark when I left the hotel. It started just, I could see a little light behind the mountains as I was running, pre-dawn, you know, where it's not complete pitch black. And then, so I could see the horizons of the mountains. I thought on the main highway, I always would feel safe because commuters, you know, there's always somebody commuting to work at 5 a.m. Paper boys are out, that back in the day, you know, there's. So I got into my journey towards the town of Lahaina. I was about 20 minutes into my run, 17 minutes, a little under 3 miles. And as I was running, you know, just relaxed, I had headphones, but they were lightly on, you know, so I could hear the birds chirping. It just wasn't loud music. There was a guardrail on the side of the road, and it had like railroad tie post with metal in between, you know, supporting that guardrail. It's the old, you know, right along the waterfront. And so he grabbed my arm. He was crouched down. I couldn't see him.
This is Live to Tell, the podcast where I talk to some of the bravest people who have been through the most horrifying things and lived to tell the tale. I'm Caitlin Van Maul. Sherry wasn't oblivious to her surroundings, but the man was crouched behind the guardrail on her right, so it was a complete shock when he jumped out and grabbed her.
There was a retaining wall where I was, and it was a lava rock beach right there. So there was no sand even on that beach. And so when he jumped up to grab me, I mean, I didn't hear him. I did not see any movement, period. It was just a grab on the arm, swung me around, and then he took his fist and just as fierce as he could punched me. You know, I had 7 fractures to my nose with one blow. It was in pieces. There was a piece sticking straight out and it was crushed. Just the bridge of the nose was completely crushed. Your adrenaline at this point, you know, it was already working for me because I was just like, you know, I'm down. He's got a hold of me by my pressure points behind my elbows. I can't feel my hands. So he was good. He knew what he was doing. This I know. He was He knew to disorient me straight away. And then when I got up, my brain went into flight or fight, you know, immediately. It was just slow motion. I could see, it wasn't light, but I could see what was, you know, facing me. I can't see his face still to this day. It's locked. It's just locked in there. I blacked it out. If he got me over this guardrail, my knees were buckling. I was trying with all my leg strength to prevent him from pulling me over that guardrail. And then the wall was about 8 feet down where he would have me off of the road if he threw me over. And so with all my might, I couldn't whip out with my hands because of the pressure points that he had behind my elbows. I had no arms, you know, it was just dead. Yeah. And he got me down that wall. And then I have pretty long hair. It was in a ponytail, which is another great thing for a predator to grab a hold of. So when he got me down, face down, he took a lava rock and crushed the back of my skull, pounded my face with my ponytail, took me here, pounded me into the lava rock, continuing as I was still screaming, and he told me to shut the fuck up. I'm going to rape you and I'm going to kill you. He didn't say rape. He said, I'm going to fuck you. I'm going to fuck you in the ass. And then I'm going to kill you.
Take your time.
And I knew he was telling me the truth. And so then I just begged. I said, please, please do anything you want. Don't kill me. I have 2 young boys that need me. I tried to get some compassion, but the way the beating, you know, when I screamed, you know, it was just shut the fuck up, and the beating got harder, but I knew my only chance was to be either to reach him through pleading somehow, some way, God willing, a miracle. And the beating just got harder and harder and harder. And in all the beating, I'm trying to think, I can't climb up that wall. He'll grab my leg. There's no way. I can't run down the lava rock beach. I've seen too many movies where women, they fall and they try and get up, you know, that it just wasn't a situation where you could run, you know, safely. It was dark and the lava rocks were big and the ocean was right there, you know, about 8 feet from me. My main focus right then was I was trying to move my head so when he would pound it in that I wouldn't lose my eyes, because my eyes were my only real way to get out to see where I could, which way I could escape. And so I kept maneuvering it. And so I took a lot of my frontal lobe area was fractured on both brows. The orbit was fractured under this eye, and then several fractures to the back of my skull, which I still, at this point, I really didn't feel pain. I mean, I know it hurt, but it really wasn't. The adrenaline was just so amazing. And then, you know, I just kind of quieted down for a moment. And as he fisted me vaginally and rectally, then his pants dropped. And I could see he had to let go of me to get his pants up. And I had a brief moment when he undid his pants and I dove into the ocean. I took two steps and dove into that water and swam as hard as I could. And that was my, I mean, I just had that one half of a second. My brain was thinking the whole time, how am I gonna get out? And there were some boats nearby. In Lahaina, there's a little harbor, which had just everything burned in Maui, in Lahaina. And so there's some boats that aren't in the harbor marina. They were free anchor.
Though the boats were close enough to swim to, Sherry decided not to seek safety there.
First of all, I felt I could see the bone sticking out of my face, you know, my nose. And I'm like, what are they going to do? You know, there's blood all over, you know, it's just squirting, oozing blood. And I'm like, who's going to help me? They're going to just like flip out, or they could be friends with this guy. In a small town, you know, one another. I just, at this point, my brain was really thinking, I'd lost trust in human being, done, game over. And so I decided no on the boat. It was just like, okay, I'm going to swim to the island of Lanai, which is 7 miles. I've decided this is the safest thing for me because he's going to be on the beach waiting for me. I can't swim in. And I just didn't know where to go, you know, because he could see me, but I wasn't looking back at this point. Because right. I knew, did he come in the water after me? I'm still swimming. And then I got fatigued. I had my running shoes on still. So all of a sudden I'm getting fatigued. And then there was a buoy and I was hanging onto the buoy and my favorite running shoes, you know, like I didn't want to get rid of them. Something so bizarre. It's like my teddy bear. Then so I had to lose the shoes because I realized, you know, they're weighing me down. I'm not going to make it, you know. And then as I'm holding onto the buoy, I just screamed, God help me. It was turbulent. And I screamed, you know, as loud as I could, God help me. It was just like, I realized I don't think I can make it to the island of Lanai. It seemed as though the water became completely calm. And then I heard sirens. Not a very religious person at the time, but something spoke to me pretty loudly in that moment that there was something saying, it's not your time. And when I heard the sirens, this pain came like, you know, I knew I was going to be safe. And the adrenaline went, whoop. And it was just like, oh my gosh, my head is going to explode. Okay, you've got to start swimming back in. And until there were 5 squad cars that came, and they came from different directions. And so I saw the flashlights, then I was just started screaming, I'm here, I'm here. And I kept swimming. And then one of the officers was right at the guardrail where I was thrown over. And so I'm climbing up towards him and he pulls me up and he proceeds to faint. And so then I'm like, this is like a movie. I mean, and then I'm, you know, just staggering to the next police officer. I just went, it's that bad, huh?
She told the officers her name, her husband's name, and where they were staying. Her husband was retrieved and brought to the scene of the attack.
I was in the back of the ambulance. He came up and just collapsed. Oh, the police asked him if we were having marital problems, if I'd been out all night. And I was, it's in my running bra, some running shorts. I was out for a run and they, you know, it's just, I know it's police protocol that they ask these questions, but it's just really, you know.
Like, I think we can put two and two together here.
Unnecessary. You know, yeah. Completely unnecessary.
The nearest hospital was across the island, but Sherry wanted to see a doctor now.
I wanted them to find the local doctor that could sew up my face right then and there. I worked in oral surgery, and so when you're putting things back together tight, time is of the essence before there's swelling, so the scars would have been much worse. And so we did some cosmetic surgeries in our oral surgery office, just little minor things. But that was just something that, you know, it's ridiculous. They should have made me go. I had concussions. But the doctor at Whaler's Village, you know, the ambulance dispatched and he said, I'll be there in, you know, 10 minutes, bring her on in. And there, you know, I was comfortable. I had no insurance. That was another reason. I didn't want to spend time in the hospital. I didn't want to be there for a week being poked and prodded. And I just wanted to be with my husband. I wanted to go home right then and there. And then I was advised I couldn't fly because of my head injuries. So the doctor did his best and sewed me up and did a beautiful job.
What kind of a doctor was he?
He usually took care of tourists he was a general practitioner, and he was not a specialist at all, but was as kind as could be to take care of me.
Do you have a sense from the doctor of perhaps how close you were to being murdered?
Oh, you know, I had 13 skull fractures, so the swelling and the bleeding, it's just, you know, my adrenaline kept me alive and my will, you know, to fight. But it could have been the first blow with the rock, could have killed me. I was just lucky. And how I moved things around to try and, you know, salvage, you know, how I was impacted. I wanted my forehead to take the brunt. But the orbit was hanging on by like 3 millimeters, you know, just, and that your eyeball would fall down. And so there would have to be a whole major surgery there. And then sometimes you have a paralysis there with your eye movement. So I was really lucky on certain things, you know, how it healed up. And we'll deal with my two front teeth were knocked into my palate. I didn't notice any of that until like 5 days later when I tried to eat some yogurt, because there were jaw fractures as well, very small. I didn't have to be wired shut or anything. But when I took that spoon of yogurt and I was like, oh boy, because my mouth was very swollen, lips were just a mess. The doctor was very sensitive as he was sewing me up, and then he had to have a nurse practitioner come and do my vaginal exam because he broke down. He literally had just a meltdown about it. I think he was scared though, because I was assaulted And I think it made him uncomfortable being a man, and that I think he really wanted her to do it to make me more comfortable. But I'm grateful. It was just what I needed. The thought of a hospital room, maybe somebody else being in a room with me. I know they would have kept me in there. I wouldn't have been released for days. I know that with all certainty. In this way, I still had a control over what was going to happen to me here on out. And not, I didn't want to have to pay for, you know, these huge hospital bills, which, I mean, I had a sense for that. I'm okay. I'm going to be okay.
Sherry couldn't go home immediately due to the swelling from her injuries. So she and her husband made use of the time.
Because we went, my husband and I went back to the site about 5 days later. I had to go back and I just had to see, you know, the area in daylight with him. And I said one thing, I'm not going to let this take away my running, take away my life, you know. I felt like Superwoman at this point, you know, and I'm just so grateful to be alive. When we got down there, and I, coincidence or not, my husband and I and one of his co-workers' wives came with us. And there was this young man, and I didn't know who, you know, a little girl with him, and it was his niece. And when my husband and I came up, and he looks at me and he says, "Oh my God, you're her." And that was the first thing out of his mouth. And he said, "I called the police because I heard you screaming." And he said to me, he goes, "Is this your watch, by the way?" And I said, "Oh my God. I mean, I can't believe the police didn't find it."
The more Sherry saw of the scene and the more she learned of the police investigation, the more frustrated she was with how things were handled.
There's a lot of still questions on things, how the police handled things. There was no rocks taken from the area after that had my blood all over them, and I'm sure that his knees were torn up by the lava rock. They had to have been. My wrist watch, my Ironman triathlon watch, was found by the young man who heard me screaming. They didn't look for anything. They didn't take any of the rocks. You know, usually you take evidence for the whole area should have been taped off. No, it wasn't. You know, they said this kind of thing doesn't happen in Hawaii. Well, it did.
Yeah, let's talk about that. So initially the police show up, you tell them what happened, you're taken to the doctor. What are your interactions with them after that?
So they came and questioned me, and I was made to feel like I was asking for it. You know, why were you out running at that time of the morning? Why were you wearing what you wore? They knew what I was wearing. They had my shorts. They had my running top. I said, "You know what I was wearing. Should I have been wearing, you know, a turtleneck and ski pants? I wasn't asking for it. I should be able to run down the street bare-ass naked and not have anybody touch me. Why wasn't your husband with you? Just, you know, I went out for a run. End of story. Do you have any suspects?" The kid who had called said he saw a green convertible Mustang was parked on the side of the road. So it was though he drove, and that's like the number one rental car at the time. There's rental car lot at the hotel, and he could have been the valet or dropping off a rental car there at the hotel for customers. I don't know why they didn't start going down that route. There was a coincidence that a woman, the police told me that they questioned, you know, hotel employees if they saw anybody leaving that morning after me. Then it came up that one of the waitresses at the hotel used to run every day that same route where I was, and she did not run that morning. So he may have been
after her.
After her. And I, the next best thing came along. Blonde hair, also, the girl was. She was so upset she didn't go into work that week because I sure as heck wanted to talk to her. My brother had called me and, you know, back, called the hotel back, and he said, you know what, be sure and get some photographs. Have Bobby take some photographs of you. Lo and behold, the police, when they took their photographs, somehow that film got exposed. This was back in the day of, you know, no digital. It was all film exposure.
Sherry and her husband had to stay 2 weeks before she was able to fly home. And that meant 2 weeks away from her two boys.
Who was taking care of your children at the time? And how did you talk to them about what happened?
It was my mother-in-law. And I asked her to fly over and bring the children. And everybody reminded me of, do you want them to see you like this? And so I didn't. There was no way to explain to my youngest was 2.5. So, and the oldest was 5.5.
So what did you tell them happened? And have you ever talked to them about like the full extent of the story?
As adults, yes. My youngest, we just said mommy had a bicycle accident. My oldest was not wanting to wear his helmet riding a bicycle. So this just made the perfect sense. Mommy crashed her bicycle. She didn't have a helmet on. This is what happens. So that's what I told him, you know, at 5. And I thought he could grasp that. And then when, you know, he would wear his helmet from now on. And he did. So the younger one, you know, he could barely talk it, or, you know, just learning to talk at 2.5. So he was just like, oh, mommy got owies.
Once Sherry was finally able to return to California, she was desperate to get back into her regular routine.
Before I came home, I had to, you know, call my boss and tell him.
I'm going to need a little bit more time.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I came back a little bit early, and he was like, I'm not sure this is a good idea, because I was so, you know, black and blue. And I said, please, this is where I need to be. I need to resume my normal daily life. Patients aren't going to have to know what happened to me, just that I had an accident.
But it wasn't just an accident. And Sherry now had to deal with the emotional aftermath.
I couldn't go out in the dark. I couldn't even take the trash cans out in the morning in the dark. I mean, I tried. And a bird flew out of a bush, and I dumped the trash can, and I ran back in, and the heart rate was just... And it still can happen to me in certain situations. If somebody were to come up in the dark and tap me on the shoulder, you know.
So how much has this, like, colored your decisions for your life?
Decision I make includes safety and awareness completely. There's never a time I'm not aware of my surroundings. Simple things like going to the city and going to, you know, a mall, shopping mall. When I leave that mall, I've got my purse, clutch, keys ready for the truck. I took care of a co-worker's pets. She was out of town yesterday. So after work, I had to go over and let them out. And then she goes, and then you have to, you know, feed them and then go back and let them out a second time. So this is at 8:00 at night. And I had to tell her, you know, I hadn't told everybody at work about my attack. You know, I've got to have my headlamp on. I've got to have your key in my hand. And I brought my dog with me. I have a cane Corso Mastiff, an Italian Mastiff.
Very big, big, big guy.
120 pounds. Brindle with cropped ears that looks like she'll eat someone.
Since Sherry didn't feel comfortable being in the dark, her Olympic hopes were dashed.
As I was struggling, I couldn't train I had to get a treadmill. You know, you just can't do all your training on a treadmill and expect to compete, like, you know, as far as me achieving that dream of qualifying for the Olympic trials in the marathon. You've got to be out on the roads. But I worked full time. So my coach had said to me, it'll never happen again. And I said, Tracy, you don't understand. I know it probably will never happen again, but my anxiety level, my heart rate, it won't work. I can't do it. The discomfort I have of not, you know, I feel like somebody's behind me. It's very uncomfortable and it defeats the purpose of my run. You know, I'll quit running before I'll live like that. You know, I mean, there's no switch when you know no fear to knowing fear.
The attack and its impact also negatively affected Sherry's marriage.
My ex-husband, you know, he was so comforting, but, you know, I'd fall asleep and he'd wake me up, holding me, you know, rubbing my back, just patting me. It's okay. I'm here. What he had to go through because he felt he should never have let me go by myself. Mm. It wasn't his fault. It was mine. I know. It wasn't, you know, the sick person.
To be very clear, this was in no way Sherry's fault.
I became just a different person. My husband was the sweetest man, provided, you know, beautifully for our family. We were happy, but it just changed me. I didn't like being touched. I just wanted my children. That's all. I just wanted the innocence of these two boys. It was enough. I just didn't feel like I was going to be a good wife, that I was dirty. Just mentally, that I was never going to get well. My fear and trust in people and the whole thing, it was just strange where I went from there. It was so hard for me to, you know, get to work and just function and be a mom. You know, I just didn't feel like I could be a wife anymore. That's a really hard part of my life still today. I wished I could have done better, managed to trust him through it and let him see me raw because he sure as heck did not want to abandon me and never would have.
I think you did the best you could.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Everyone is doing the best they can. Yeah.
As part of their victim services fund, Hawaii paid for Sherry's therapy for 6 years.
So for 6 years, you know, I had the therapy and it was a place I went to sometimes three times. You know, and people didn't talk about, never heard of any woman sharing about assault and rape. And there weren't the TV shows like Dateline and all these, you know, that nowadays can be beneficial to some people when they hear other people sharing their stories and the recovery and the options that you have and different types of treatments that there are available today.
What was the kind of therapy that you were going to?
I went to a psychologist and a psychiatrist. They were partners. So he medicated me in the beginning and she was my therapist that I would speak to. And so he was just the one writing the prescriptions. And at first they had me on Valium. And I couldn't run. It just, my legs felt drugged, poisoned. So it was like, this isn't going to work. And then if my house were on fire, I don't know that I would wake up. If my kids needed me, you know, it's a heavy duty drug. And so I think I took that for 2 or 3 weeks after I got back home. And then they put me on this antidepressant, Paxil, I think it was. And you had to up your dosage over a period of time. And I felt like a zombie. Like people, friends of mine were like, lights on, nobody home. Are you okay, Sherry? There was an emptiness in my eyes, which there was an emptiness in my eyes anyhow, from what I had been through.
But you didn't find the drugs helpful.
No, not at all. Didn't help my sleep at all. The dreams were vivid, you know. I'd go to sleep and it would start right back up. He's chasing me, you know, and this went on for years, you know. And then when they stopped paying for the therapy, I went for a bit longer, and it was just a cost that I wasn't benefiting. I was getting angry that, you know, I was spending this time and I wasn't getting any results.
So Sherry started self-medicating.
Then I went out with a friend of mine after work, and my ex-husband had the kids for the weekend, and I had a cocktail, a shot of tequila and a beer. And man, I got home and I had never slept so good in my life post assault. And then it's like, oh, okay, well, we can do this on the weekends, you know, we don't have to work and the kids will be gone with their dad. And then it just snowballed. And then it became a daily after work. I medicated for 4 years and started becoming my mother. Dealing, you know, I finally saw it was like, oh my gosh, this is what my mother was doing. She was medicating something. You know, how do people drink daily? So, you know, it wasn't taking, you know, I finally realized this isn't, it's just masking the problem. I'm still the same person during the day that still has those trust issues. And I'm destroying my body. You know, I'm all about health and fitness and being present as a mother, you know, because my kids said one day, they said, well, why is there alcohol in the refrigerator and you don't drink? And it's like, oh, that's for company. Then they started noticing, you know, mom, why are you acting funny? A couple glasses of wine, you know. So that just, you know, it had to stop. Then I put myself into rehab and thought that, you know, maybe I could have some better coping mechanisms with. And then I got kicked out of rehab because I wasn't sick enough. I wasn't like, you know.
Being rejected from rehab, Sherry was open to any alternative method to help her stop drinking.
I ended up going back in like 2012 to some hypnotherapy and tried that. And I heard there were great results, like one visit and you're done with this new treatment. And she said I was a difficult case, so I was probably gonna have to go for 6 months. Well, after my third visit, my nightmares were back. And this is 20 years later after my attack, as bad as they were post-attack. And I just, you know, and I'm paying out of pocket, and I just said, you know, I can't do it. I have to sleep.
Yeah.
I'm not ready to open this. And now there's some new psilocybin guided treatments that they're using with veterans. And I've heard there's just amazing results, but I'm not, you know, I'm not ready to go there quite yet. You know, I'm actually in a pretty good place. Since I've moved here, I haven't had any dreams.
4 years after the attack, the Hawaii police contacted Sherry about identifying her attacker.
They sent over a lineup. I got contacted when I was at work. And so my boss took me to the Encinitas Sheriff's Department. And that's where we went through it with another investigator, you know, that so he had photos for me to look at. And there was one photo that I just flipped out, like froze. But I said, I can't I can't ID him because the face is blank, but everything else matched. But give me a voice recording and I will identify him in 1 second.
Did they do that?
Give me a voice lineup. No. But it's almost as though we had that one lineup sent over and then nothing ever since. And what was the story? I said, why? You know, why am I getting this lineup? What happened? Somebody must have been harmed. And I wasn't entitled to any of that.
Well, yeah. On the one hand, it's like they can't tell you because you witness to your own assault. So they can't, like, I get it. But also it's extremely frustrating from your perspective that, like, can you just tell me what's going on?
Yeah. Yeah. Is there something you're tying to my case, or is it another case that someone, now a woman was found dead a half a mile north of where I was. And that was about a year before my attack. And supposedly the same head injuries. So to me, I mean, the odds of it being someone else seems very unlikely to me.
Right.
Because of the location.
Her attacker is still unknown, and this just doesn't sit right with Sherry. While advocating for herself is a daunting prospect, Sherry has used her spare time to advocate for others.
So when Chelsea King went missing while on a run out at Lake Hodges, it was full forces, immediate. And her body was located, I believe, within 2 days. It was all over the news. And there was previously a young girl, Amber Dubois, who was missing. And it was very interesting. The two girls came from two totally different types of family. One was a broken family. One was, you know, very prominent family in a well-to-do neighborhood. And the police went into this with Amber Dubois that she, you know, could have been a runaway, an unhappy teen because of all this. And they really didn't even look. It was so sad.
Sherry was part of the search team that set out to find Chelsea King.
And, you know, I was a little leery. It was going to be so upsetting, bringing back uncomfortable feelings, what I may come across. Safety, this monster was out there. You know, but within the groups that showed up were hundreds of people. So when she was found, you know, I had met the parents at the search and rescue, and Amber Dubois' mother was one of the volunteers heading the rescue. She became involved in search and rescue. The Kings, you know, started immediately when Chelsea was found, immediately started looking into laws and changing and awareness and the whole picture of what can be done to change, you know. And so I started gathering signatures, which you have to do in order to propose this bill. Every weekend I was downtown Carlsbad in a park where it's heavily trafficked with runners and walkers and along the boulevard. So push comes to shove, we finally got Chelsea's Law passed.
Chelsea's Law was signed in 2010 and enacted longer sentences and longer parole periods for sex offenses to children. Chelsea and Amber's murderer had served 5 years in prison for child molestation before he took their lives.
I felt, you know, I just felt I had to be involved in it. Part of my healing, part of, you know, just making, being there, I'm a voice. I survived. I'm their voice. You know, the least I can do is be the voice for all those who do not survive these things. It's just, you know, until the day I die, I will be that voice. When you approached me, of course, I have to do this.
Sherry is using her voice to amplify the dangers of running alone, and encourages runners to take safety precautions.
Even to reach one person, you know, with each sharing of my story, and so many people that I know that their daughters would go out and, you know, they're on a soccer team and their coach tells them to run during the summer. and they're running alone. And there's just no reason, you know, that that should be happening. There's a buddy system I always speak of, you know. And if you don't have a buddy, you don't go. You go to a gym in the safety and presence of others, or you get your parents or your siblings, or things can happen, you know, not to live in fear, but to be protected, you know, when you're, if you are going to go for a run, you know, just make sure you have people who know where you are, because there's people that are still going to run alone. There's tracking devices for your phone. Find my iPhone where you can be located. Always have your phone set for your 911, you know, that you can easily grab it. But, you know, to me, it's just, I advocate never run alone. That's my message.
Today, Sherry keeps herself busy with work and volunteering.
I used to work in oral surgery, and then I worked for Rock and Roll Marathon, doing several different things, from their elite athlete to their wheelchair elite athlete handler. And that's where I kind of found a niche, dealing with Challenged Athletes Foundation and their athletes. And so I did a lot of volunteer work with them. Life Rolls On was another, and Chelsea's Light Foundation. So when I moved out here, I thought I was going to retire, and that wasn't good for my brain. Having that amount of time off, not being productive. So I'm working full time, and it's called Borrego Outfitters. It's like an REI, outdoor gear. I see my grandkids once a week, and just the light of my life. I have a grandson, a granddaughter, and I have one due any day. And then I run. I run 5 days a week on my treadmill, and continue that. And I'm toying with the idea of maybe another marathon. My last one was when I was 45, and I did really, really well, placed third in my age group. So the talent's still there.
To speak to someone at the Rape, Abuse, Incest National Network, call 1-800-656-HOPE or 1-800-656-4673. You can also live chat with someone at rain.org. That's RAINN.org. This is Live to Tell. I'm Caitlin Van Maul. You can follow the show on Instagram and TikTok at Live to Tell Podcast. If you enjoy today's episode, please rate, review, and subscribe. It really helps the show. I'll see you in 2 weeks.